Hi, welcome back to CMDA Matters, and I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp. This week, we're going to introduce a short news segment at the beginning of CMDA Matters. We want to share with you testimonies about why CMDA matters in the lives of some of our champions and volunteers. This week, we're going to start off with Dr. James Avery, who tells us why CMDA matters in his life.
It's no exaggeration to say that I can almost not imagine my life without CMDA. During my med school years and residency, there were few, if any, Christian role models at the training programs where I was. I remember going to a national meeting when I was in med school and finding out I wasn't the only one. And there was something about thinking you might be the only one that made a person lonely and a bit disconnected. And CMDA taught me at an early age in my professional life that medicine was a holistic art and science. And I think this really helped me not to get burned out and discouraged or even resentful, as I saw among my colleagues. My patients were people who God loved. You know, the interesting thing is my professional life as a physician has been quite varied. I'm amazed that CMDA could touch me at so many different times in my life, because the needs of an intern are very different than the needs of the chief medical officer of a healthcare system in Washington. You know, in both my personal and professional life, CMDA educated, encouraged, and equipped me. And often at times when I felt most alone, most helpless, most vulnerable. But it wasn't just the professional growth. I believe CMDA literature and colleagues, the community, made me into a better husband, father, brother, and a son. And I will always be thankful for CMDA. I can't imagine how my life would have been different without CMDA.
Well, I'm quite sure that you're hearing about and very concerned about the problem of our fellow Americans experiencing hunger these days like never before. You know, due to the economic and societal changes with COVID-19 restrictions, with many people having lost their employment, I'm hearing about staggering numbers, more Americans than ever suffering from hunger. I hope you'll allow me to brag just a little bit on our CMDA national staff. They've proven over and over that they are generous people. In response recently to a plea from our local Bristol food pantry, our CMDA staff made a donation to the local food bank whose supplies had been exhausted. The goal was $2,000, but I'm pleased to tell you that our staff gave over $4,000 to feed the hungry here in the Bristol region. Over many years, you as our CMDA members and volunteers have also proven to be extremely generous. So I wanted to remind you about a wonderful opportunity we've been given again this year. A couple of CMDA champions have provided us with a matching gift challenge of $135,000. Every dollar given between now and June 30th will be matched up to $135,000. This is a strategic and timely blessing to us at CMDA right now because our fiscal year ends on June 30th. As you might imagine, the past 60 days have not been the best time for us to raise financial support for the many ministries of CMDA. I would be most grateful if you would consider your best gift of the year to help us claim all of the match that's been offered and to finish our fiscal year strong. You know, you can do this by just going to our website at cmda.org/donate and click on the banner Give to CMDA, or just call 888-230-2637 if that's more convenient for you. Today's interview with Dr. Peter Saunders, the chief executive of the International Christian Medical and Dental Association, is an inspiring message of opportunity. Peter was born in New Zealand and originally trained as a general surgeon before serving with the Africa Inland Mission at Kapsawar Mission Hospital in Kenya. He then completed 2 years of mission training at All Nations Christian College in the UK. From 1992 to 2019, he served full-time with Christian Medical Fellowship, a UK-based organization with 4,500 UK doctors and over 1,000 medical students as members. He was first their head of student ministries, and then from 1999 until recently was the chief executive officer. In 2019, he started a new role as the chief executive of the International Christian Medical and Dental Association, ICMDA for short. ICMDA is the global umbrella organization that CMDA USA and 11 other national Christian healthcare organizations launched in 1963. I've asked Peter today to give us an update on COVID-19 from a global perspective, as well as to tell us about the amazing things ICMDA is doing to support Christians in healthcare and hospitals around the world. You'll hear Peter say that we don't want to waste this crisis, and that message has resonated with me, and I trust that it will resonate with you as well. Well, all the way from the United Kingdom is someone who's become very special to us here at CMDA USA, because about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, Dr. Saunders, you were here in our studio, and we got an opportunity to interview you and share your story with our listeners. So welcome back, and now it's not Christian Doctors Digest, it's CMDA Matters.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here.
Talk to us a little bit about, since it's been a year, how were things going in the pre-COVID-19 months for you?
Well, it was a big change for me. I originally come from New Zealand, and then I ended up in the UK and was 27 years with the Christian Medical Fellowship, which is the CMDA of the UK. And then, as you say, I made the move to the ICMDA, the International Christian Medical and Dental Association, in January 19, so just last year. And the office for the previous 8 years had been in India, and we moved it to St. Albans, just north of London in the UK at the beginning of February last year. And I took over then, and ICMDA began back in 1963 with a conference in the Netherlands, and it's grown ever since then, so that we're now 84 national movements of doctors and dentists around the world. And we had 12 new movements join at our Hyderabad India World Congress in 2018. So they're flowing in still, and there's a lot more movements that we're engaging. So it's been a very different year for me, a lot of travel. I've been to 18 countries last year on 19 trips. So I went to Indonesia twice, but lots of other places all over the world, and just seeing what God is doing amazingly among Christian doctors and dentists in incredibly diverse locations. It was wonderful to see.
I was trying to think about who our listeners could hear from who might have their finger on the pulse of what COVID-19, what's happening with COVID-19 around the globe. And when I, at the board meeting for ICMDA last year there in Indonesia, when I saw what your schedule was ahead, thought Dr. Peter Saunders is in communication with more nations and more influential healthcare leaders around the globe than anybody I know. So let's talk about the UK first. How is COVID-19 impacting your life and ministry there in the UK?
Well, for me, it was a very busy last year. And then my wife needed an aortic valve replacement right at the end of the year, which went very well. She's recovered well from that. But it meant that I took some time off. It was 2 months in the UK without traveling. And then I just got back into it again in January. I went to Hungary for a conference, then to Egypt, and then to Oman in the Arabian Peninsula. And I came back at the end of February, went to a conference here of medical educators run by a group called PRIME. And it was at that conference that there were two nurses from Finland who were both infected with COVID-19. So that was my nearest first scrape. I didn't get it, but about a third of the 40 people at the conference did.
Oh, wow.
So I managed to escape. And then I went home the next week. I was about to leave to fly to Kazakhstan and Central Asia via Kyrgyzstan. And 2 days before I was meant to fly, we heard that a British national had been
impounded in Kyrgyzstan in a hospital for 2 weeks with armed guard. And they weren't showing any symptoms at all. And so I was advised not to go. So I tried to reroute through Kazakhstan directly. And then within a couple of days, they'd reported their first cases, the borders had closed. And then all of a sudden, my next 7 or 8 trips were cancelled, everything right up until the end of May. And of course, all our national groups around the world were closing their conferences then. And there wasn't at that early stage any real chance to reorganize them in other ways. It just wasn't the time to do it. And so all of a sudden, I had 3 months of my life completely rescheduled. And I thought, what am I going to do? Well, there's been more than enough to do. And in a sense, what we've had to do is just readapt to this new situation and this new way of working. So we closed the office back at the end of March. We had total lockdown here in the UK on the 23rd of March. And then since that time, I've been based at home. My wife is also home working. She's a pediatrician doing triage stuff at the moment. And so that's how ICMDA runs now. It's all gone virtual.
Well, we talked a few weeks ago in that virtual environment about some ministry issues that we had in common between CMDA USA and ICMDA. And at that time, you were explaining to me an interesting concept. I have heard it mentioned from time to time in the national news, something about a green zone approach to quarantine. And at that time, you thought it actually might be a better alternative in many countries around the globe. Could you explain for us again, and for our listeners, what the green zone approach is to quarantine or what isolation looks like?
So this was an article that was published by The Lancet, I think in March. And the issue they were grappling with was how you section off various parts of the population. Now, red zoning is when you take people who are infected and you closet them away so that the rest of the population is protected from them and doesn't get the infection. So if you're dealing, say, with Ebola, it's the red zone principle. Infected people get protected off, quarantined. The green zone idea is that in a disease like COVID-19, where there are certain groups who are much more susceptible to it, the over 60s, over 70s, those with chronic conditions, immunosuppression, diabetes, hypertension, you quarantine off those people from the rest of the population in order to shield them from infection. And that enables the rest of the population to proceed. Now, we didn't get any opportunity to do that in Britain because we had so many cases coming in very quickly that the disease really got completely out of control and we went to lockdown very quickly. But green zoning has been raised as a possible approach in the developing world, particularly where lockdown can be very, very damaging, not just to the economy, but to people's health as well. Now, in the West, of course, we can stock up and live very easily at home. But in societies where there are huge numbers of urban and rural poor, and where most people are living in a cash-based society where they're paid daily, and they don't have anything in the way of savings or storage facilities or refrigeration or whatever, mm-hmm. To introduce lockdown, as has been done in countries like India and Nigeria, Pakistan and so on, without any warning, you create a whole host of other problems. I mean, just as illustrations, in India, there were rural hospitals where there was no evidence whatsoever of COVID-19, but they were on total lockdown. And there were families who were starving because they didn't have any money to be able to buy food. And there were others who were being beaten up by police because they're trying to get to the hospital or returning migrant workers from other states. And so the solution in those situations has been almost worse than the disease. So the idea of green zone is that you protect those who are most vulnerable and you allow the rest of the population to get on with life. And so the economy can still run, others can still function.
Are you aware of any countries that are actually applying that sort of approach at this point in time in the developing world or elsewhere?
No, because it happened so quickly and many big countries in the developing world, as I say, like India, Pakistan, Nigeria, high population countries, they just reacted immediately following the West and going to total lockdown before there were really anything much in the way of recorded cases in their country. So this hasn't really been fully tried yet. I suppose we're seeing it in some Western countries. One of the areas that we failed quite badly in the UK is that we didn't have enough testing kits at the beginning. And so they're only testing hospital patients and they're only testing after that medical staff. And they forgot about the care homes. So large numbers of elderly people living in private hospital type facilities. And the carers who were going into these weren't screened. They took the illness in. And now we're finding that a large proportion of the deaths are due to people dying in care homes. Now, it's precisely that sort of group that you want to protect. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you're moving from lockdown to getting the economy going again, unless you have an effective green zone facility, it's not going to be successful.
What are you hearing from the various respected Christian leaders in healthcare from around the world? What have they given you as their perspective to ICMDA on the COVID-19 pandemic?
It's like we're all in the same storm, but we're all in different boats with different facilities. And it's been strange that even in this time of globalization, every nation state seems to be attacking this problem in its own way. And people are using different methods. And so that's what we're hearing from around the world. It's a very different picture wherever you go. So if you go to Singapore, Korea, Hong Kong, Oceania, particularly New Zealand, where I come from, Australia, they're pretty much on top of it. In fact, it's been completely eradicated from New Zealand now. There haven't been any cases for several days.
Wow.
And Australia's in much the same position. And they only went up to a level of about 4 deaths per million population. But you consider that the UK is at 300 deaths per million population. They seem to be able to stop it in its tracks through an early lockdown and then a very rigorous and vigorous campaign of test, trace, and isolate. So you've got that picture. You've got other countries. An example would be Uruguay and South America, where it got in initially, but again, they've got on top of it fairly quickly with similar methods. Then you have Brazil, where the president doesn't really seem to believe what other presidents believe, and it's pretty much running riot. So Brazil now had the third highest number of deaths yesterday, and they just haven't implemented any procedures. Then you've got countries like Sweden, which are perhaps have practiced more of a kind of green zone idea. So they've allowed people to travel, but have protected those who've been vulnerable. And then you've got, as I was mentioning before, the big developing world countries where lockdown has produced lots of problems, particularly for the urban and rural poor. So we're hearing different stories from everywhere. And it's very interesting to see how the interventions that are put into place influence the way that this runs its course. I was talking just a couple of days ago to an American missionary doctor in Pakistan who was telling me that what the Pakistani government have done is that they've allocated a large number of big hospitals around the country as COVID-19 hospitals. And so all of the patients who are suspected will go to these hospitals, get tested and admitted or sent home. And so that's had the effect of protecting the Christian mission hospitals. There are probably about 12 big, you know, greater than 100-bed Christian mission hospitals in Pakistan. And all they have to do, therefore, is to see people at outpatients wearing appropriate PPE and triage them in the right direction. But they haven't been overcome by patients themselves. Mm-hmm. But the problem they are facing is that because the public transport's been so disrupted, people aren't able to get to their hospitals with routine medical and surgical problems. And that's had a huge effect on the hospitals as businesses because they haven't had the income from elective surgery and elective OB-GYN procedures that help to keep them running because many of these hospitals now have no links with the Western world at all. And so they try to be self-sustainable. And so we've seen problems with staff having to be let go or have wage cuts, and some of them tolerated and others don't. And there are huge financial pressures. I know the situation's similar in Nepal, Bangladesh, I'm sure in parts of Africa as well. So this is what we're hearing. It's the same disease, but different in every country, particularly in the developing world. There's a huge challenge, and the disease probably hasn't really reached there yet to know what it's going to be like in the longer term.
As you're hearing these reports and receiving information and stuck, if you will, there in the UK, how have you retooled your plan for 2020? I know that you've decided to lean into this with a lot of education and information. How are you trying to support the various national movements of Christians in healthcare around the globe right now?
Well, shortly after the whole thing started, we had an executive committee meeting, and I had to present the budget for the year, which, of course, did not include COVID at all. Mm-hmm. And the board, thankfully, said, let's accept this budget as a working document. Otherwise, we would have had to stop doing everything, but go away and think and readapt and just come back and make suggestions as to how we should go forward. So we decided at that point that we would try and use the crisis of COVID as a real opportunity to gear up in a different way. So we thought we'd do everything around COVID and use it to develop facilities and systems and structures that are going to help us going into the future. So the first thing we did was we started a COVID information page, which is really much more of an internet portal to all the best resources, both Christian and medical. We set up a blog, and we got people from all around the world writing blog posts on COVID-related issues. Some of them were clinical, some were biblical, others were pastoral. That's been very, very popular, and we've translated those into 5 different languages now. So we have a big army of volunteers who can help with this. We started a bi-weekly COVID bulletin, just drawing together all of the most useful information and packaging it readily for busy doctors. And then about 3 weeks ago, we started our COVID webinar series. And so twice a week now, we're running webinars that we're advertising throughout the ICMDA network. So I've just actually come before this interview from our 5th webinar, which was on critical care in COVID patients. And we had 178 people on that from all over the world. So from the Americas all the way through to Australia and Southeast Asia, but the majority from the developing world at those. And so we've got those lined up for a few weeks ahead now. And then we've been working on a project to improve medical education in hospitals in Africa and Asia in order to help them in COVID preparedness. Now, just this month, we launched our distance learning 2-year diploma in family medicine. Mm-hmm. We've got 33 students from 15 countries who've enrolled for that. And we got a miraculous provision of bursaries to enable 19 of them to start the course. And so we're already keyed into distance learning. This is a course they can do from their hospital. They can work full-time in a mission hospital, serve them and be upskilled in the process over 2 years. And that's a partnership with Christian Medical College in Vellore, India, and Loma Linda University in California in the US, plus ICMDA. So it's a 3-way project. And so we're thinking, well, could we use a distance learning approach to prepare hospitals in Africa and Asia for the challenge that COVID's going to bring them over the next few months? And as it turned out, our partner in India, Christian Medical College, CMC Vellore, has just, with the help of a grant from an Indian foundation, put together a 9-module course in COVID preparedness. So everything from triage and testing through to critical and palliative care. And they're currently road testing this in 25 Indian hospitals. And the idea is that through this online distance learning course with appropriate mentoring, they train up one person in a mission or church hospital. That person then trains a team of 4 or 5, and then that enables them to make the hospital COVID ready in terms of all the processes that they need to put in place and knowing what equipment they do need, how to make PPE out of local materials and so on. So our idea is to take this course and road test it, pilot it in about a dozen or so countries in Africa and Asia, and then resources allowing to see how it goes and rolls out. Now, we know there are some places, like in Pakistan, we've established won't need it because all the patients are being diverted to government facilities, but there'll be a lot of places where they're potentially going to be swamped and they won't be properly prepared for it. So that's just some of the ways in which we've had to adapt, really, and let things go that are no longer possible, but really believe that God is working through this and using it to help us be prepared both for this situation and going into the future too, because we may well be looking at a future where there's a lot less international travel, it's less possible to run international conferences, and these kind of virtual meetings and seminars are much more appropriate. For example, at the moment, there is an English family physician who's teaching saline solution, which is very much like your Grace prescription series, to a group of half a dozen South Korean leaders, including professors, leaders of our two movements there, with a view to improving evangelism training. Now, of course, it's all being done online in 2-hour segments over several weeks through Zoom.
Are there any other sorts of opportunities that you've seen and maybe already have a glimpse of what God is doing and how he might be able to continue to use ICMDA to build his kingdom?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, apart from those I've mentioned already, I think imaginative ways of running conferences and events. In the UK, the Christian Medical Fellowship of the UK had their conference at the end of April, and initially they were going to cancel it, and then they thought, well, let's revamp it and run it digitally. So they normally get about 300 people coming to that event over a weekend, and they ran it virtually instead. Well, they had over 700 people attend. Mm-hmm. They ran a 4-hour event with two excellent Bible talks on the book of Habakkuk. They had a futurist doctor by the name of Patrick Dixon, very famous, speaking on life post-COVID. And then just a whole series of videos and interviews and testimonies. And of course, everyone was there on screen and on Zoom. And it was wonderful. It worked incredibly well. So this is what I see all around the world, is that people are finding different ways to meet. I think this is what we're seeing here in the UK. There's been lots of prayer meetings. The attendance at churches is much higher to virtual services. In the UK, only 6% of people go to church normally on a Sunday, but about 25% of the population have dipped into some kind of Christian or church service.
That's amazing.
Since lockdown began. And so we're just praying that God will really use this opportunity. And of course, there's people asking lots of big questions about life and death and eternity and the meaning and purpose and having the things that are really important ripped away from them, that it is an opportunity for the gospel, I think.
I know that's international news. I know the CMF leader there reached out to me because he'd heard about the suicide of a New York City emergency medicine physician, Dr. Lorna Breen. And I was invited into a living room of an apartment in New York City last week and was able to attend a prayer meeting with several in attendance who were personal friends of Dr. Breen, and to attend a lament, you know, on Zoom, to be able to pray and to mourn with that group. And I just never had participated in anything quite like that. In fact, I've never been to New York City myself. And yet here I am in the midst of a group of a very multi-ethnic gathering of Christians in healthcare, praying and hearing a testimony from a fellow doc there at the hospital that Dr. Breen had worked with, and just understanding the pain. Because here in Eastern Tennessee, like a lot of the rural places, I'm sure in the UK, my staff here at CMDA, none of them even know anybody who's gotten COVID-19. Yeah. And yet here I am now meeting with a group that's just face to face with death every day. Yes. What an opportunity, Peter, that we have right now because of technology.
I think that's part of God's amazing providence, that if this pandemic had come 20 years ago, we wouldn't have been ready for it. We wouldn't have had the technology to make use of it. But now we're in the situation in God's timing that we are ready for it. And we can find the opportunity in the face of the danger and the threat and really make something of it. And I think one of the things that the COVID pandemic has done is that it's sped lots of developments up in time. And I think it's encouraging us to work in all these different ways. And it's almost like God is saying, well, don't waste this crisis, but use it to prepare and get ready for the future for the things that I've got planned, because maybe this is not the last crisis of this kind that we're going to face. And the other thing is it's doing, I think, is just creating wonderful connections between churches and between Christians in countries all around the world from different cultural backgrounds, that people can come to our webinars and they can hear an expert really at the top of their field, and they can sit in, you know, in their hospital in Burkina Faso or Democratic Republic of Congo or Indonesia or Thailand, and they can all be there together benefiting from this. So I think it is a wonderful time of opportunity, and we really need to grasp it and not waste the crisis that God of course is sovereign over, but is also comforting us and helping us through.
Well, Dr. Peter Saunders, thank you for joining us today on CMDA Matters. And I have a feeling we're going to be working a whole lot more together with ICMDA, helping to facilitate success in empowering and equipping our brothers and sisters around the world who are caring for the least of these. Thanks very much, Peter, for joining us today.
It's such a pleasure to be with you. And I think when the UK and the US get through this immediate crisis, there will be a massive opportunity for us to be a blessing and a help to those in less privileged societies. And we need to grasp that together, as you say.
Amen. Amen. Well, those webinars that Dr. Peter Saunders mentioned on COVID-19, I believe you're going to be seeing some of our own U.S. experts contributing to those in the future. You can find those free webinars and other resources that Peter talked about by going to icmda.net. One of the things that matters to CMDA is ministering to the underserved around the world. For many years, during our national convention, we took up an offering for ICMDA, which helped them significantly. Because the convention was canceled this year, they did not receive those funds. I'd like to encourage you, when you go to their website, to click on the donate link and make a donation if you can, and if God leads you, that will help them continue their mission and vision. We definitely agree with Peter when he said God's timing to provide other ways to connect was providential. We've been doing at CMDA USA several things to connect and encourage you during this time, including an online devotional and prayer time each Wednesday at noon Eastern Time for just 15 minutes. So just join or even watch later. You can go to Facebook and search for CMDA Courage in the Crisis. You know, it's been our desire for years to develop an online program for continuing education. We had a great lineup of speakers and workshops for this year's national convention, and it was important to us to get this information to you. So our IT folks and continuing education and digital media departments made it happen. And now we have the CMDA Learning Center, where our members can obtain free continuing education. Non-members can also pay a nominal fee and get access to these materials. Many of the workshops that were scheduled at the National Convention, along with seminars that were recorded earlier this year in Dallas, are now available on the CMDA Learning Center. You should have received an email about our CMDA Learning Center by now, but if you didn't, just go to pathlms.com/CMDA to find out all about these new great resources. I want to conclude with a final message. As our culture and our profession increasingly challenge biblical standards, this is a time when we all as believers need to recommit ourselves to faithfully follow Christ, regardless of the pressure to compromise godly principles. You know, we can take courage from the example of our faithful brothers and sisters in other countries like China, Iran, North Korea, Pakistan, India, Nigeria, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Vietnam, who are experiencing persecution for their faith that threatens not only their livelihoods, but also their very lives. Our Washington office participates in regular meetings with Ambassador Sam Brownback, who leads the State Department's Office of International Religious Freedom. Ambassador Brownback recently reported on how some countries are even using the current pandemic to persecute people of faith by denying them aid, locking them in prisons, and keeping them in concentration camps where the virus can run rampant. Some of our CMDA members serve in these countries where they, too, are risking their lives on account of their faith. Would you please pray for our colleagues in these countries and especially for the persecuted believers, that they might remain faithful to Christ, that God would protect them and overturn wicked regimes and bring religious freedom to the people. To learn more, you can just visit our website, freedom2care.org/international, freedom2care.org/international. In closing, I want to share with you from Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21, where Jesus told us, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, dear child of mine, there your heart will be also." I hope you've enjoyed the podcast this week. Please join us next week when my guest will be Dr. Bill Geiger, a retired family physician who's loving this season in his life. Dr. Geiger is a wonderful example of a follower of Christ, experiencing an amazing life encore of service and ministry following the great physician. Following the great physician, we know that matters to you. And so it matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.